Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Hi, Jess.
June.
How are you?
Listen, I want mentally to get to Vegas.
Okay.
I want to get to Vegas. So I don't want to spend too much time on where I am, which is probably the antithesis of Vegas. But I want to get to Vegas. So let's just say this. But I have to tell you, I got to be in my bonnet. I can't get into specifics, but I wanted to get your take because I feel like this is something you're really good at, which are boundaries. But specifically, the Maya Angelou quote, when people show you who they are the first time, believe them. And then what happens when we willfully, which is a DBT term, okay, willful and willingness. Willful is when we push through what we know to be true. And then as Iyanla Van Zant said.
Okay, we're bringing in all of the elders. Okay, yes.
As Iyanla said to somebody who knew who somebody was, but pushed through, she said, when someone shows you who they are, you have to listen because they're telling you who they are. They're telling you how they're going to treat you. Mm-hmm. And when you willfully ignore that, and then they do it, they do exactly the thing they mm-hmm. have told you they are going to do, mm-hmm. then you don't get to be angry. Because they're doing exactly what they said they would. And you heard it.
Oh, God.
So you Deep should
diver,
expect...
She's pointing directly at the camera, directly at me. She keeps on pointing at me. What? Okay, rhymes and riddles and rub-rub-a-dub. What are we talking about?
I can't get into specifics because it's too personal, but I would just say that, like, I went against my best wishes when I knew to be true about something in a situation. And then it has shown its true colors to me yet again. And I'm feeling enraged, like I could chop down a tree right now with my bare hands, like Paul Bunyan. And yet I remembered Iyanla saying, hey, you don't get to be angry, friend, because you understood what the parameters were and you said yes to it. And then that is on you, my friend. And so empathy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for the self, but also to say, I hear you. And I don't know if me being angry right now is the most effective place for me to be because I need to radically accept, like, I knew what the situation was and I went forward anyway. And has this happened to you? Do you struggle with this? You seem to be a person who understands boundaries and knows what you need to do and say to protect oneself. So I'm looking for some guidance. I think deep divers out there probably have similar situations. Because I think as women, we often push through what we know our instinct to be.
Oof.
And I toast you
Cheers.
With my
and
lemon
spindrift. Yeah. And she took her spindrift up and toasted the camera. I don't know what, it's hard to speak on this without knowing what you're referring to. I'm so glad you brought Iyanla into the space because I loved her so much. I want to check in with her and see
where she at. Where's she at?
Well, I mean, you know, her and Oprah had that really long feud for a while, and then she came back on. She had her own show that Oprah produced, and then she came back on years later and they sort of rectified what happened. And it was one of the most powerful episodes of TV.
I remember it. I remember it vaguely. I
got to
watch it again. Because they really spoke their truth about you hurt me when this happened. And I was thinking that this was
and
what
it was. And they had laughs and they had, it was Love painful.
That.
And it
Love
was,
that.
it was really powerful, a powerfully vulnerable and, you know, it was just beautiful and I loved it. But, But I, It's so hard because I did, you know, Casey and I were in that strange group therapy class for about a full year, full calendar year after our movie Ass Backwards collapsed.
This was one the summer. Healing of the bodies, not
yes,
the werewolf.
It was more
class.
Body
that
work
acting.
That okay. It was like body work that went into, you know, a head work. And we met every Monday night from the hours of 7 to 10. And she always went past 10. That was the issue. And I think Casey talked about it on the podcast. She always went past 10. And I was starting to get like really enraged about it.
Right, right.
But anyway, that's a whole other story of my issues.
But there would be like a dental hygienist like writhing on the table.
Correct.
And you couldn't really be like, and that's time. But you were like, I was promised something and you're not delivering.
No, and I had nowhere to go and nowhere to be. And I had no children nor a job or employment.
But I still
felt like I can't get up.
Right.
But why has this been facilitated in a way where, and you know, I always respect this about analysts, therapists, that they are, and I know people get annoyed by that, like, and that's our
it
time.
It hurts. It hurts me every time.
But you know what? It's actually a display of boundaries and respect, which is to say, like, I hear what you're saying, and this is the time. And they're so cautious about, I'm going to call you back then. And this is how, because time is an act of like love and it can be abused. And I really get a lot of anxiety around people or on things going on too long after we've said they were done.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so what she talked about, this woman who ran that program talked about in the class was this idea of intentions and counterintentions. The same idea of like, this is my will. But then this other will is sometimes stronger, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I say I want these things and I say that I know something's wrong here. But what I want more in the moment, maybe validation, money, whatever it is, that will is actually stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like complicated, you know? And I don't know what to say, Jess, except the only thing I will offer you is I don't ever believe in saying I don't have a right to be angry. And in fact, that class that we did was all about saying go all the way into your anger, all the way. Because if you don't allow yourself to feel it, then and say this isn't happening. Because I think for many, many years would deny my own. And I think I got a lot of affirmation for this as a child where it's like, I don't need much. You know, and so it was nice to be around me because I could be self-sufficient. But I see now as an adult the ways in which that's damaged me, you know, to deny my own experience and needs. So I am like, yeah, you're angry about it because no matter what, if you did trust something and believe in something and it fucked you, it's still hurtful. And it doesn't mean you can't learn and not repeat it. Sure. But I don't like this. We don't get to be angry. I don't.
Right.
I worry about that.
Well, yeah, we can have whatever feeling we want. It's really what we do about it and how we express it and what's the most effective
thing
to do next
time. But like, go chop down a tree, you know?
Well, you know, I'm at my cousin's summer house and I know he's got an axe somewhere. This is a guy who wanted us to, do you remember the reality show 1800 House, where they took a bunch of people from the modern day and had them live on the prairie and see if they could survive?
No.
Yeah, it's called 1800 House. It was, no, I'm sorry. It's called Frontier House. 1800 House is when they lived like the turn of the century in 1800s and they had to boil their clothes and stuff. This was, they took a bunch of like a family from like Laguna Beach and put them in the prairie. And they're like, now you've got to build your own house. You've got to, you know, do all this stuff. And the women like fucking lost their shit. They were like, it took me 12 hours to do my laundry and I had to wash my hair with lye and I can't live like this. Okay. My cousin Kale and his wife, Julie, who is like one of my favorite people in life. She's a humongous deep diver, but he very early on when he was single, before he met Julie, he submitted myself and my brother and him to live to go to Frontier House and live. The fact that he thought I could survive even one
day. God, I wish you were on my show.
I know.
I know I'm talking about Ayanna and Oprah being the best, you know, hour of TV, but like, I do believe.
Can you imagine? Like, the livestock would be let out, like, the whole thing. We would have nothing to eat. We would have perished, the three of us.
It's so funny that both of us, and maybe it's because of the state of the world that we're all kind of, like, wondering about our own survival instincts and like how we would do out there. Cause Jason Mantzoukas, he did get me into that show alone.
I know. Oh God. Well, that's, yeah, he's built for that. He looks like he's on the show alone.
Yeah. It looks like he's been on for several seasons, but
yeah,
he got me into it. And I have to say it is, it's a wonderful show, but
sure.
Seeing these people wrestle with, of course, the logistics of, you know, how do I build my shelter first? Do I try to hunt first? Am I going to try to build, am I trying to fish? Am I going to be, you know, looking for big game? All of the questions, how long can I not eat for until I need my energy to build my shelter? All of this stuff. But I'll tell you, Jess, the thing that fucking gets them is the psychological challenge of being with oneself. Okay. That is what
crazy?
Gets each and every one of them.
Wow.
It's and like, you start to hear them talk to themselves, talk themselves out of staying, negotiate with themselves. And that's what I find so fascinating about the show is you can have all of your expertise. And then ultimately nature's going to decide, did you step on the wrong route? Mm-hmm, did you, mm-hmm. you know, eat the wrong berry? And now we need to call in the medical team and you're going home. There's all those things, right? Mm-hmm. But like, if you let go of all of like nature's unpredictabilities, the thing that people have the hardest time with is being alone.
Yeah. And sitting with your emotion. Sitting with the thoughts.
And wrestling with. Yes, this one woman said the other night in a teaser for the later part of the season I'm watching, she said, you know, I can't hide from myself.
Well, all the buffering we're doing, the chocolate, the podcasts, the
and listen,
the porn, the whatever we can get our hands on.
Absolutely.
Let me not feel that.
Yep, like, my Amazon
let me
cart,
feel it.
All of it, all of it. And I'm going to tell you, I know I wasn't in the Arctic, but in some ways, Las Vegas provided a similar setting.
Okay, I want to hear.
And I know it's not a sort of smooth transition, but I do want to connect some dots.
Because it is the frontier.
Yeah.
You guys said the second night the Haunted Souls came out, like the ghouls came out to play.
Jessica. No, and I want to preface this by saying I had the time of my life.
By the way, can somebody give me a fucking heads up where you guys are going? Because to find
course,
out my friends.
You
I don't need
are
to be
away.
There. I know, but it's arresting to me to not at least okay. know the zip code. Because
if
I get a call and
you're
I'm
right.
like, hey, we're trapped in prison. We're in Thailand. Like, I'm going to be like, oh, okay. I got to like readjust first before I then come up with a plan to save you all.
You're
like,
right. I wanted to surprise you.
But
I'm hearing that was hurtful and it's too disorienting.
I'm on a lazy river. I don't know. You just came back from vacation. You're back out on the road. Like, I don't know what's happening or why. And by the way, like, gone are the excuses. Like, we're celebrating Matt's wedding. Like, we're done with that wedding. He is married. Okay.
He's very
so I don't know what celebration this was for and for whom. Or if it was just
it's a celebration of life.
Okay. But like you on a lazy river and you've bought yourself a floaty, like I don't know where to place you. So anyway, where in the world, where is Waldo? You were in Vegas, okay? And then I hear the second night you had like some sort of a hangover, you know, pursuit of ghosts or like, did you lose, you know, everything? I don't know. These are cryptic Instagrams.
Listen, and by the way, I do want to formally apologize. I do hear that. I think if I saw you somewhere and I didn't know you were going to be there, I would have some feelings. So you're absolutely right. That was reckless. I think I wanted it to be a surprise, but the truth was it took a lot of planning to get there.
But also, you know? Can I borrow that dress? I want that dress on my body.
Absolutely.
I want that dress on my body. Okay. Anyway, so, move on.
You know that I have been really interested in living.
F-U-N.
And fun.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
And so I really want to preface this by saying so much fun was had.
Oh, I bet.
What I had not accounted for was the air of desperation and devastation that sits above that city. Okay. Now, I've experienced it before. And I want to share with Matt and Casey and Julie who were on the trip with me. Matt and Casey, of course, probably a lot of our deep divers know. And Juliet is one of my best friends from.
She's the one who you had to shower with to not be away from, right? Is that Juliet?
That's correct.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. This was the one who came down to Miami. Okay, I'm just setting the scene. Okay.
Yes. And so I was like, let's go during, and I still believe in traveling during the weekdays if you can.
Sure.
Okay.
Kids are in camp. The kids are in school. They're not missing 9 to 3.
Now, again, I know that a lot of us can't do that with our jobs, but if you can take a couple days off on your vacation time, obviously I don't have a job, but I'm free to go whenever.
You wouldn't know it.
It's going to be so hard when I have to report to the deep divers, like I'm destitute.
Oh, I'm almost there.
It's going to be hard to say those words and look back on all the footage, but of how I got there. But I was like, let's go on a Wednesday. Now, I thought that was a great idea. But looking back, what I'm realizing about Vega is that Wednesdays are for the pros. Wednesdays, who are there on Wednesdays are...
they got to make a bottom line or else it's over for them.
There's a different vibe.
Got it. These are not the bachelorette parties. Are not coming. That's why that club was so empty.
I think so. We were also there quite early. Okay.
Of course.
So, but long story short, and there's, you know, I can't repeat everything on this podcast. Let me just say that.
I understand.
That there. So, So I can't repeat everything on this forum, but let's just say a lot of fun was had. However, here's the interesting thing. Like, it occurred to me as soon as we stayed at the Four Seasons, and I don't want to come on this podcast and disparage the Four Seasons because luxury hotels are my bread and butter. And I would never want to. But Casey wanted to stay at the Four Seasons. I was like, oh, I've been to one brunch there in Vegas, but I think there's no real Four Seasons. And she was like, no, there is. There's the hotel. And I was like, I think so. What it came to be was that the Four Seasons is really like the top 5 floors of the Mandalay Bay.
That's insane.
So even though, and they have their own separate entrance and stuff, but I know. And so, and I say this only
because. It's a cake
topper. Exactly. Only because there, when we walked into the room, we had an upgraded suite and that was wonderful. And there was a dining room. There was a full dining room. Okay.
So you could host a sit-down dinner for 12?
Yeah. Yes. Obviously, Casey stayed in her own room. Everybody knew she was never going to stay with us. But when we walked in, we ordered breakfast because we got there pretty early on Wednesday and we got into the room right away. Like everything seemed, you know, to be working out and was coming up roses. And then they brought our breakfast in. And of course, they're like, well, let's set it up in the dining room. And went to that dining room and I kept on trying to turn on the lights. And it was, first of all, like dark wallpaper. And then no light, like one chandelier, but with the lightest of bulbs. I'm like, okay.
As an HSP, you can't survive in that darkness.
Okay. So I'm like, oh. And then that was the last time we ate in there. But now I swear to you, Jess, I'm not running around talking about energies and vibes of every single place. I'm really not. But as I would walk by there, that particular spot, I was like,
what's happened there?
Demons in there.
Yeah, like a bogey attached themselves to, I hope not. Remember my friend who had those two bogeys riding side saddle? Yeah, like, but no, what I imagine, honestly, is you guys sitting at this 12-person thing. There's four of you. And then remember in the Haunted Mansion ride at Disneyland where you look back in the car and there's like three other ghosts behind you?
We ate with others. We ate with others. And I've never been so sure about anything in my life.
Like the Nicole Kidman.
With this others.
Is our house. This is our house. Remember?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That was it. Oh, God.
Okay. And then there's...
The whole city is haunted.
That's what I'm saying. The whole city is haunted. So now, and that's fine. And in fact, despite everything I'm going to say, I'm very interested in going back there.
Okay.
And so I know that's going to be confusing as well. But the reason why I'm interested in going back is because I feel now prepared. What happened to some of us, and it hit us at different points, you know. It hit me first when we went down to the pool after that breakfast. And I realized, again, Four Seasons, there were no umbrellas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I tell you it's 110 degrees.
Yeah, you're baking. Just and like when your dad left you in that crib.
Exactly.
You were cooking.
So he said you were really cooking. And so I said to the guy, can we get in the shade? And he's like, there's only those. There were two umbrellas for an entire Four Seasons pool. And I'm like, and then I start to have this creepy feeling of, what are they trying to do to us?
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
He goes, if you sit here in about 3 hours, the shade will naturally, the sun will naturally
shade. I have to wait? I don't have the rest of my life to wait for the shade to come.
As Matt said, he goes, I could be dead. I could be cooked. So now we're huddled around the bar area where we basically like set up, like people are putting their sunblock on in the bar because it's shaded.
They're trying to seek shelter.
Exactly. So we're like getting ready there. I mean, that was my first hit of something is not
amiss.
Right. Something is amiss. So please know, time of our lives, some crazy shit went on. It was really, really fun. But I had to battle some demons. Now, it came up again. So that night, Casey sort of went down with something. And then the next day, actually that day we went into the spa and, I will say the spa was a refuge.
Sure.
Casey and I had a couples massage, obviously talked the entire time. Had two wonderful practitioners, Douglas and Allison, who changed our lives.
Great.
And I asked them, here's the interesting thing about massages. So I asked them for more time. Now I know I've talked to you about like 110 minutes.
Sure,
and I know
but,
a lot
they're,
of divers,
but they
like,
have, they can say no. That. They can say no.
Thank you. So I said, can we have some more time? Because it was that good. Because we only had 60 minutes, which is really 50. And Casey was so shocked. She was like, it would never have occurred to me to ask for more time. And I was like, well, they can, again, if they can't, they can't. But if they can, I'd like to stay there. So in the massage, I start telling Casey some of the, and this is what I'm saying about Vegas unlocked something. And because I think there's so much shame in that city. True shame.
Right.
And true kind of like, well, we're all coming here to win and all of us will lose.
Well, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And why? Why don't we want to bring whatever happened there with us into our rest of our lives?
Yes. And also this sort of like the energy of like, I want to escape my life and have an experience where I can feel opulent and I can feel wealthy and every piece of architecture in that city like sort of is directing you, all the casinos directing you right back to losing your money. And in fact, that's what I did have that thought about the umbrellas. I'm like, maybe they don't want us at the pool. Maybe they want us back at the casino at the Mandalay Bay.
They want to chase you. Yeah, because you're sitting at the pool. Like, what are you doing? You're wasting 10 hours that you should be wasting money.
So I start to have this image of like all these demons pushing us back to the casino. Okay.
This isn't an ad. Las Vegas is never coming on as a sponsor.
I know. Never. Again, this is Wednesday though, Las Vegas. I mean, it shouldn't even be open on Wednesdays probably. So I then go into a couples massage with Casey and reveal One of the most shameful details of my childhood that has like haunted me into my adulthood surrounding, and I won't get into it because I'm telling you, it's too dark to even share. But let me just say this. There were things that in my childhood, I've said this before, experienced a lot of love, but there were areas where I didn't know how to take care of myself.
Right.
Some of them have followed me into adulthood.
Right.
Okay.
I hear you, with you, been there, done that.
Okay.
All of us. Yeah.
And then it's,
and
so
this
it's
was one of those details.
So one of these details comes up and I'm weeping. You know,
whoa,
I'm pretty sure Casey was crying
massage,
too.
During yeah. the massage.
Yes. And, you know, Douglas and Allison have been clearly impacted. Like we all, and it was like it unlocked for me in that massage in this place, because I think it was such a shameful place, you know? And so there were just things on emotional things that were unlocked, like portals opened there.
And did you feel lighter after you shared that with Casey?
I did.
And with the other two practitioners? You did. Did you feel less shame around it once you let it out?
I felt shaky there.
Shaky
I
there.
I felt emotionally
now,
shaky.
Now do you feel better that you let it out? Because maybe Vegas is a place better. Where we let out our things.
That's a lovely
And then
reading.
We do leave it. We leave the shame there in Vegas. Maybe that's
well,
the way that
so
it goes.
What was so interesting is like Matt and Casey and I, once we all sort of like, I told Casey when the first night we were there, she started to get a little shaky. And we're also doing mush. We're doing we're also not on, we're taking
Earth.
Substances that are going to, you know, go one way or the other.
Right. Yeah.
And so I said to Casey on Saturday night, on the first night we were there, I'm sorry, I was like, we got to be vigilant about the fucking demons here.
Yeah. We like, you got to be
vigilant.
Yes. Yeah.
Now we're with someone, one of my best friends, Julie, who there's nothing that's going to penetrate her light. And so yes. She's not having that. She, you know, she doesn't have that experience at all. Like she's just like fun, fun, fun. And it was great to have her. But I knew about me and Casey and Matt, we're more vulnerable.
Yeah.
We're
if the
more vulnerable.
See an entry and point, they'll get
And
on
I will
you.
Tell you, I saw one thing. This was the second night we were going home. I saw one thing where we were in the Uber going home and we're on the strip. And also, the amount of children that were in Vegas was fucking freaking me out. I was like, get the
children
out of
Vegas.
Here. Get them out. So I see, as we're going home, and it's late, okay? Mm-hmm. This dad walking his daughter. Now, she's no older than 5 or 6.
Oh, my God.
And I know what I'm going to describe sounds like a hallucination, but several people have verified it. There are some street performers, okay? And so I see the clown from It.
Wait, Pennywise?
Pennywise, thank you.
You know how I know what the name of that is? Your fucking husband brought me on his Twitch show and showed me all of the bad people in movies and asked me if I knew them and what their names were.
I'm so sorry, Jessica. He's so
like a prank.
Sick.
It was like a prank.
I will tell you, I put Paul on tape for the role of Pennywise in the new It. Okay. And I
fucker does
literally it. He scared me so much that I said, I cannot help you. I cannot hold this camera and hear you do these lines where you're speaking out of a grate, like a event or whatever
no,
he was doing.
No, no.
Okay.
No.
I was too scared to even do an audition, a tape an audition with him. So
can I just briefly pause to say apparently some kid here told all the other boys that Pennywise was in the woods here. And so a group of children were found with swim goggles and a bunch of pickleball rackets and regular rackets. And they were searching the woods for Pennywise. And then we had to try to figure out who was the person. And all the adults were like, Amy, I don't know how they heard it. We never found, no one would come forward and say, I'm the reason that they know who Pennywise is. But I will tell you that we had people. And now, God, thank God, BB was not in this group.
Oh, thank God.
Because, you know, we had some rough nights of sleep for some children.
I
tell them a haunted clown is in the goddamn woods. And what is what are a pair of swim goggles going to protect you and a pickleball racket from a man like that? Is he a man?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
I know that.
Well, what I saw was Pennywise. Thank you for saying that, bringing his name into the podcast. Although I really don't even want his name in this podcast. But
well, now that we've said it, he's probably coming. You'd have to ask Paul.
I see wood paneling behind you. Like if he's anywhere,
I'm going to be dead by the end of this podcast. That's clear. You've already summoned in the spirits.
No. I'm gonna. No, at several points during this trip, I was saying to Casey and Matt were saying to me, like, tell them that you're protected. Like, tell them.
Tell the demons that you're protected?
Yes. Because what I started getting really scared about is because I was being the most vocal about the demonic forces in Vegas, specifically in our dining room. And I was like, they're going to, because I'm willing to speak out against them.
They're going to come for you.
And speak truth to power. They're going to come to me.
But that is true that when you see people come into a room, they go, ghost, get out of here. Like, yes. You got to be like very clear. Like, I'm not interested in your bullshit. Get out.
Yes. So I then see Pennywise go gangling up to this little 5-year-old girl. Like,
and oh, my God.
Fucking tripping.
Why? Yes. Why would you do
gangling
that to somebody?
Up to this little girl. And I'm like, and I'm watching as I'm, and she's like, and then right behind Pennywise is Freddy Krueger. It was just so, I'm like, that girl.
I don't understand.
Like, who is a street performer? So it was just very.
That person should be put in jail. Who?
Thank you.
Who
thank
targets
you.
A 5-year-old?
5-year-old girl. And so there
but also,
just
if
moments,
you got your 5-year-old out at 2 a.m., like, you got
exactly,
to expect Pennywise is coming. You got to expect Pennywise
also
coming
so
for
upset.
You.
But then I'm like, there's so many families there who are like, this is our one, you know, this is our summer trip. We're going to Vegas. And so I get it and I respect it. It's just, it's not a family place. And it's a hard place. You know, it's a hard place where bad things have happened.
You will never, ever see me in Vegas ever again as long as I live. I went once and I said, I will never return. I went once. I saw Bette Midler in concert. We met her backstage. It was beautiful. My best friend Brandy, who's here with me in New Hampshire right now, that was for her 30th birthday. And as I drove out of Vegas, I said, thank you. I will never, ever set foot on this haunted ground ever again, as long as I live.
Wow, Jess.
Not even for a paid endorsement would I show up in that city of sin. I can't. I'm too much of an HSP. It will destroy me.
I'm feeling like you shouldn't go back. And yet I just found out this morning via Casey that Adele will be there in November, that her
might go.
Residency is rescheduled. So
that might
I,
be really fun. You know what? I'll go. If I'm with you guys, I'll go. If I'm with you guys, I'd go. Okay,
now,
I'll go.
Here's how I want to go back, however. Not on a weekday. That was a mistake.
Yeah,
and I
gotta,
own it.
Yeah, it's got to be
okay?
lots of people.
I want to be with the bachelorette parties. I want to be with like the, we're going crazy. Now, I thought I actually, where I was wrong is I was like, oh, I can't be around that sort of like hetero energy in the bachelorette parties. And now I'm actually like, no, I do need to be around them because the other underbelly that I saw on Wednesday, you know, Wednesday right. Vegas, I don't know what Tuesday and Monday are like there.
Listen, I'm coming back for Adele. That sounds great.
It sounds great. And now I would need to come back with crystals everywhere, like sewn into my outfits.
Into
honestly.
Your undergarments. Yeah.
Into my undergarments. I'm not staying at the Four Seasons of the Mandalay Bay. That place
God,
is
no.
a sham. You know, that place is an
no.
absolute sham and it's haunted. and
is there a Marriott there? Marriott Bonvoy? Can it get us somewhere there?
You they know what? I think I would there. Do the Wynn. I'd do the Cosmopolitan. I'd do
something. Do me something with a wave pool. If there's a wave pool, I feel safe.
Well, Jess, there was a wave pool at the Mandalay Bay.
Right.
And
but the Mandalay
Casey
Bay probably isn't
that, well,
haunted.
Casey said that the Mandalay Bay is 1,000% haunted. Casey said that we were looking out our window overlooking the Mandalay Bay wave pool.
That's
and
what
Lazy
it is,
River.
The bay.
And yeah, and it's our the own pool at the Four Seasons. Again, we went to the Mandalay Bay pool, also not an umbrella to be seen. So it was, I started feeling like they're trying to kill us. Mm. So as we were overlooking from our suite, the Mandalay Bay, Casey said that she was seeing all of these people standing like little soldiers in the giant wave pool, but there were no waves coming. And I said, I think that they're
broken.
Like I,
it, or it's broken. It was broken. They're waiting for waves that never come. This is
the
like,
way I never saw the waves from our perch. Now, when I went down there, because Matt and I, Matt had a, had a real like need to go on the lazy river. I went.
Yeah,
with
he was like, I gotta be in the bonnet.
It.
You paid $800, I'm sure, for a flotation device.
Again,
that you then
we'll never discuss how
pack.
Much I paid for those two floats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and as Matt said, like the energy on that lazy river was utterly insane, and people were. It was like everybody was racing to get somewhere. There was nothing lazy about it. People were pushing and like. Running down it. Lots of people not on floats, just walking to see
they
people
afford
march.
The floats.
And
that's
have
very
like
upsetting.
The
and they're,
sort
but they're
of
marching against, like, are they, were they trying well, to walk up the lazy river?
No, they
that
weren't.
Should
you
be
couldn't.
Not allowed.
The current was very strong. So, like, you were kind of like just like taken with it. But people were like some swimming and like trying. And I kept saying, like, where are you going? Like, where are you trying to get? There's nowhere to get but around just restart, okay? And I said to Matt that I promise you that 90% to 95% of the people we floated around with in that
were
lazy
the undead.
River were
the undead.
Were at the Capitol on January 6th.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? They were a part of the insurrection. So I'm just going to say it. Because I know it's true.
That would honestly, that would really help the investigation if they were just to.
I'm like, just go there. Go to the lazy river, the Mandalay Bay, and start issuing your subpoenas.
And your
because they need to be. It was a very intense crowd, and there was nothing lazy about it. There was nothing relaxing about it. I then said. To Matt, I'm like, we got it. We did two rounds around the lazy river. I said, we got to get the fuck out of here. Immediately, we must go. And of course, like, we don't have even a place for our belongings. And so our shoes are like in a plant somewhere where we hid them. And then we're trying to get out of the water and get our towels and, you know, all of that. And so then I said, let's go. And the good news about going back to the Four Seasons at this point was like, it seemed like more of a refuge, even though they also had no umbrellas, because of what we had seen at the bay. But as we're walking back, we walk past the wave pool, and we get back to see Julia and Casey in the pool. And Casey frantically asks me, did you see waves? Did you see any waves at the wave pool? I said, Casey, I saw one small wave. And she's like, okay. I mean, we were.
this is like a short film. This is like in black and white. I'm watching this mood piece.
It was an art film.
That would get like the Palme d'Or because it would show like the disillusion and the disintegration of American culture.
There's a dissonance also. It's a cognitive dissonance. It was a spooky trip, and yet it was a fun trip. And yet also like when we left and I thought for a second, I thought my wallet was gone the morning we were leaving. And I was like, they're trying to keep me. They're trying to keep me here.
But and I think actually that's that song. Remember about leaving your wallet in the car in Vegas? What happened last night? Remember that Katie was that Katy Perry song?
Yes.
But that's a fun night. That's different.
But we had so much fun. And I still maintain that even when you're pursuing life at the rate and the level with which I am pursuing life,
you're
gonna run into
the
spooky parts. You're gonna run into the joyful parts, and you gotta be awake and ready for it all. Now we left and it wasn't like I didn't necessarily say like, oh my God, I had so much fun. I was like, we survived. Like we did. It was more of a team building activity.
Well, that's like when Carl Hornbauer and I were in Pittsburgh for 3 straight months before we had kids. And Lindsay Sloan was there. And we would every night go to dinner because we had nothing else in our lives. We had no family to speak of, you know, to call home to. And we would go to these dinners and they would be so magical actually in Pittsburgh, you know, and we would order the seafood towers, et cetera. And we after like 10 wonderful nights, we wandered into this very strange smelling Greek establishment. And I turned to Carl and I said, I think we should go. And he goes, no, we have to stay. We've had 10 great dinners. Sometimes you have to have a weird one to round out the experience.
And you know what? I had actually, you know, I did some canvassing for Obama in Vegas and I brought Paul with me and we did, you know, we stayed at an insane hotel off the strip and like we met so many night workers and so many casino workers and it was a wonderful experience.
Right.
And so I have a deep amount of like love and respect and I have for the workers of Las Vegas and for like all of the people who live and reside in Vegas.
Yeah.
Please know that I am particularly talking about a casino culture and
right.
the people who descend in and then destroy their lives there and then
the
cannot get out.
Yeah, those visitors.
Yes, the
right.
visitors. And I was one and I,
you
know.
You got out. You got
I
out
got
with
out.
Your life intact.
Yes.
Thank God. Oh, and you know I had the best, I think, I don't know if I ever told this story, but it's not a good story, but I had the best makeup of my life done there.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
And the makeup artist, I said, what is it that you do here? Because there's no film or television shooting there. And she was giving me the most flawless look to this day. It's the best
wow.
picture that
would have
exists
loved her
of me.
To have her number. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I wish I had her number. And I said, what do you do? And she said, the bulk of my business is sugar babies.
God, amazing.
Sugar babies.
Oh, God, to be a fly on that wall, to hear her
story. And
stories.
I said, tell me what is up with that. And she said, these women have, you know, a fabulous life, really, because they're being taken care of and put up in these penthouse apartments. And they just live in Las Vegas. And some of them only work 2 days a month.
Wow.
Because
their sugar
daddies are paying all of their bills. They're in the best clothes, the best hair and makeup of their lives. Like, they got everything. And then they just 2 days a week, 2 days a month, hang out
have
with their sugar
them.
Daddy.
They do have to fuck them.
I think so, if you're getting that kind of hair and makeup done.
Listen, it seems like a small price to pay, the way you're describing, you know, her skills. Jess, again, I'm here. I made it out. You know, I arrived on a Wednesday. I left on a Friday morning. And I live to report back about it. I saw some things, you know, I saw some things.
Well, only
but I
time
feel
will
closer
tell.
To my friends.
Only time will tell if you've got bogeys riding side saddle. And I'm not, this isn't like a bit. I'm saying if we start to feel pain in our back or any sort of disruption in your bodily structure.
No, listen, Matt,
we can't
I'll tell you
go
two
to the guy who
things.
Cleared those bogeys because
no,
that
no, no,
guy
no.
went crazy.
I'll tell
crazy.
You two quick things. After the last night we were there, I went into the bathroom and I heard very strange noises through the vent. I called Matt in. He said, I heard the same exact thing.
Was it Pennywise?
Then, probably.
He's
and I said, we're
vents,
too far
apparently.
Away from the elevator. It makes no sense that it's the elevator. And he says, it's not the elevator. So I'm going to report on that. And then the second thing that happened was Matt told me that he didn't want to share this. It was interesting to see like when everybody was comfortable sharing like the demonic sort of like hits they were getting. Matt said, I didn't want to tell you, but I woke up one morning, we were there and I thought I heard you crying in your room. He said, I heard a woman crying.
Oh my God.
And I said, Matt, don't you fucking dare.
Like normally you would be right. Normally that would
yes.
be me crying, but it wasn't
he
me.
He walked over to my room and was standing outside it and then realized it wasn't me and went back into his quarters. You know, Matt's quarters seemed to actually be the only place that was safe. You know, his quarters felt really, really surrounded by protective energy and light. The rest of us were out there, you know.
Yeah, fighting for your life.
Sleeping, yeah. So,
wow.
So Jess,
all right.
That's it.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
That's it. And again, I'm ready to go back. And I've got my eye on when Ticketmaster is going to announce whether tickets are available. I know that a lot of ticket holders from the tour that she canceled are going to get priority. I know there's a whole, but please trust and believe that I am on the pulse of those Adele tickets.
I saw RuPaul's Drag Race in Las Vegas, and it was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. So there were
moments. Oh, no, the performances you're going to see there are.
Oh, my God. It was so good. I was so obsessed with it.
Here, when the demons show you who they are the first time, believe them. You're going back in and you're going to be eyes wide open or eyes wide shut, whatever it is. All right, let's get to this fabulous interview we've got going, okay?
Deep divers, we have a real treat. A real treat ahead. Erica Oyama is my friend, but also the Emmy-nominated creator, writer of the hit series Burning Love. She's written for comedies such as Fresh Off the Boat, Young Rock, and the acclaimed Mindy Kaling Netflix series Never Have I Ever, of which she directed 3 episodes. Mm-hmm. She's a dedicated mentor through her involvement with the WGA New Member Program and the organization Mentorship Matters. And today she is joining us on the deep dive. Erica, welcome.
Wow. This is the happiest moment of my life.
First of all, she's bathed in angelic light. I want everyone to understand, like, I don't know if that's a glow from a fireplace or what, but she's so beautiful and glowing. She's a glowing person.
You know, I'm sitting in front of a window.
Thank you so much.
For
you. Erica, I was reflecting on our relationship, and to this day, I count working on Burning Love. Jessica was also on the show playing a sister wife.
Sister wife.
But working on, and specifically the second season of which I was the star, playing Julie Grisselwhite, I count working with you and Ken as truly to this day, one of the best professional experiences of my life. Truly.
And it showed. It showed how fucking funny that shit was. That it was just pure, like, unadulterated comedy. And that you looked better than ever, June, in that spray tan.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
I feel like, was that the beginning of blonde times for you? I feel
you
like
know, it was a part of my transition period.
Yeah. You were making the transition.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, Erica, because I'm noticing some highlights that I haven't seen. And I don't know if it's the window or what, but it's a real, there's a real warmth around your hair color that I'm loving.
Look, the word blonde is, it's out there. And it's tough for me to say, given my heritage, but I'll say it.
Sure.
It's something I brought to the salon. You know, I had a hair person move to Orange County. And then I, you know.
That's a hit you took.
That's a hit. And so I just Googled best salon Los Angeles and then went to that place. And took them the word blonde, and here we are.
Boy, well, they are the best because it looks great.
Thank you so much.
It
looks great.
It looks beautiful. You know, but you always look beautiful.
Always. But I was thinking about, and I know Erica is a deep diver, Jessica. So I've received a cut. We've really touched down together on a few things over the course of our time on the deep dive. But I was also thinking, Erica, about how I didn't have kids when we did Burning Love. And I remember, you know, I mean, Jess and I have talked about it too, like not having much modeling of motherhood in our industry, like not seeing many people do it, but also like do it in a way where I was like, oh, that's conceivable to me.
Yes.
And I don't know how it was for you, actually, Erica, because this is my own. But I remember thinking, I remember talking to both you and Ken saying like he was taking the kids on Saturdays because Erica wrote such amazing stuff for that show. And like he was taking the kids for the full day so that you could have days of like writing and then seeing your mom come in with the kids to set. And seeing just sort of like the structure of it as just a person and being like, oh, they've
it's possible.
Yeah. And they've kind of figured
it seems like they're really doing it. They're also working together. And you were just really doing it. And it was one of the few times where I was like, that seems possible.
I mean, that production was run and gun. It was like 3 weeks to get two seasons worth, those, you know, seasons two and three together. And my mom did, I did fly my mom out from Alabama to help with the kids. But then she took it upon herself. They were at a park and ran into a preschool teacher that had been like my kid's preschool teacher, who was just like not working at the school anymore. And my mom was like, do you babysit? And that's been our nanny for like almost 10 years.
What?
Wow.
Because oh my God, mom needed, I love that.
My mom needed help. She was like, I have a life
of course.
Back in Alabama.
Yeah. From.
And yeah. So
she felt so like she was going to be professional. Trash there.
Yeah. What you saw was unsustainable, and my mom fixed it.
Oh my God. God bless your
mother. Now, I will say, because this will go back into small talk, I will tell you, Jessica, Paul's mom this weekend hosted like a little pool get together yesterday with some of her friends from work. And she had a chef there. Which I was like, oh, wow, I thought we were having like chips and guac and, you know, catch as catch can. And he was putting out shrimp cocktail. He was putting out like baked mac and cheese for all, there was a bunch of kids there.
Okay.
And then I was like, how did you how did this come to be? And Paul's mom said that he was her Uber driver.
Oh, there we go.
Wow.
Got a small talk.
So I do think, like, and just thinking, Erica, about your mom striking up a conversation, it's like some of these, and I don't know if this is a chapter in your book that you're doing.
Of course it is.
Jessica. Okay. But some small talk turns into like lasting professional relationships. Sure. And
tell me something that I don't know. You said the book was not a good idea.
I can't wait for that book.
Thank you, Erica. Erica, you will be getting a free copy.
June
will pay price.
Let me ask you, Erica, as a deep diver, do you do small talk?
Not that well. I'm striving to, like, I'm inspired by this podcast and what I've learned. And I'm trying. But sometimes I'll just hear my attempts as so bad that I just have to run away.
No. Erica, by the way, would you consider yourself on the shyer side, or are you more of an extrovert?
Totally. Totally introvert. And that's not to say, like, I'm just like, as June knows, I love the work of Susan Cain, who wrote this wonderful book, Bittersweet, and also this book, Quiet, about introverts. So I'm like very specific
about... So
I've just
completed Bittersweet, and now I'm moving to Quiet.
Quiet is
and
wonderful.
I'm going to try to get her on the podcast. I mean, I'm going to just like make a cold DM and
I
see what I can get.
100% possible. I think she would love it. Speaking for Susan Cain, who I've never met. But that book was so wonderful because I just felt very seen by it. And I felt like...
By Quiet or Bittersweet, Erica?
Both. In terms of being an introvert. And because I think a lot of people think introverted means shy, but it really just means you need quiet. You need to like build up your energy before you take it out to... Like at work in a writer's room, I'm like, cool. I'm not quiet at all. And it's just like... I have that experience and I'm joking around and I'm like, you know, pretty outgoing, but then I come home and I need to cocoon.
Get your energy. You need to, that's how, it's like, how do you plug in? Where is your plug in? Is it to other people or is it by yourself? I think
we
both can function very similarly in the outside world.
Right.
Well, and as you know, Erica, Paul Scheer, and I would say Ken is a similar, I don't know Ken behind the scenes, but I do think Ken and Paul have a similar level of energy.
Yes.
Okay. And
me.
Paul is incredible. Yes. And you, Jessica.
Yes. The three of
when
you.
I and, think Ken, I'm like, I get it. I see both of those men. I
yeah.
See them.
And
I
they
see
are
them.
Energized by people and
That's
not depleted
right.
by them.
Absolutely.
That's interesting to me.
I don't think I've been alone for the last 4 weeks. And I mean, I've not been alone for even 5 minutes.
Oh my gosh. I just wrapped two seasons in a row of Never Have I Ever. And so I feel a little depleted energy-wise. And this last weekend, there was a block party at the end of our street. And so Ken was like, oh, it's like, you know, they've got face painting and tacos and all this stuff and like fire trucks. I'm like, okay, I've seen fire trucks.
Yeah.
So at some point, I'm like looking around the house for Ken and realize he's not home. And I just like decide to walk to the end of the street and I see him sitting, getting his face painted, eating a snow cone.
What a child would do.
How did I know you were going to be like chatting it up? He's like the mayor of wherever he goes. And it was
absolutely true.
It was great.
He has a wonderful energy in the world.
Yes.
And I see you two as a beautiful pairing.
Aww.
As a beautifully, like, I just love you both so much. And it's very rare, I think, to come in a couple, like, with, and no offense to you and Dan, Jessica, I love you both too.
Thank you.
But with Ken and Erica, it's like, and I also had the experience of really being supported by both of them, really seen by both of them, really kind of like lifted up by both of them together as a duo. But so I feel very much so in your relationship, Erica, but I do, it's just rare to be like, I love this couple, you know,
so
and I just love the two of you together. I love you both separately. I love you together. It's just a very special thing.
Do you can I just ask, do you still have a karaoke room?
I'm sorry, we're peppering
room?
You with 8 million questions.
No,
go ahead, Jessica.
We're going to get to your actual work, but do you have a karaoke room still in your home? The only time I've ever been in your home, which is I'm sure not the home you're in right now, I was brought into a professional karaoke room.
Right. I mean, some would call it a crawl space, but it was, we don't live in that home anymore. That was like a home that Ken had when we first met. And it was like divided into three levels that were like three different apartments. And so this was like when we had kids and like took over one of the levels, there's like a weird middle kitchen that we didn't need. We didn't need another little kitchen. And so he and Joe Lutrulio put up a wall and insulated it, soundproofed it. And that was our karaoke room that we called Nine Tight because it fit eight comfortably. And for our wedding, we were given a professional karaoke machine, not to brag. It's like dead technology now, but like, yes, we had some nights. We had some
Well, it wasn't just
there.
Nights. I want to explain that I was walking down your street. I was not going to your home. And Ken, I don't know if Ken was doing some yard work or whatever it was, but he
seems to be outside the home quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, and he said,
just on
hey,
the street.
Hey, do you guys want to lay down some tracks? And before you knew it, I was in this darkened room and it was like 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. And we and then I thought, is this a bit? Like, is this a long comic bit? But then I'm just sitting there listening to Ken, who has a beautiful voice, sing quite earnestly a song. I don't know. I wish I remembered what it was. And I know that when Lennon
it's
goes
probably
to karaoke,
is, yeah.
Right. It's not about, like, this is not a bit. I was like, this isn't a bit. Like, we're really trying our hardest.
No. Yes.
You know, and Lennon does Fancy. Lennon will always do Fancy. Don't let me down. You know, and she's like, this isn't a fucking joke. So if you are trying to make a joke out of this, like, please leave. Now, again, I didn't ask to go down into that room. I was taken.
Right.
Jessica, let me ask you something. And I'm realizing that what I love about this podcast is the opportunity to get for all of us to get to know each other better. But Jessica, I don't know the answer to this question. Are you a singer?
I would say I do a better job impersonating Ariel in Part of Your World than I do singing as myself.
Wait, I have to, hold on, I have to sit with that. So are you saying the only song you can sing is Ariel's A Part of Your World?
Yes. And when I say that when I sing it, I sound exactly like the woman who did the voice for the movie. And that's it.
So that's the only song you sing. That's your karaoke song?
I mean, again, I don't like karaoke. It makes me very uncomfortable. And I was taken against my will down to Ken's bunker. And
I would like
sing.
To apologize for that.
No, Erica, you
him.
Weren't a part of it and you weren't home.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you know, I have done karaoke with you guys. And I think it was for maybe Erica's birthday at some point downtown. But I also only do one song and one song only. And a lot of karaoke machines don't have it.
What is
and
it?
And that's Stars from Lemis.
Oh, I knew it. I should have known. Now,
and
Lennon,
that's a strange song for a woman to sing, first of all, but
it's weird. And also, I think, I don't know what your vocal talent is, June, but I'm just going to put it out there that that song, okay, requires a vocal range that most professional Broadway singers don't have. So like, I definitely would like to hear that version, but I'm going to come at it with expectations that
there,
are not
out in the darkness.
Oh God.
A fugitive running.
Oh, God.
That's I can sing that song.
It's a man's foot. You're
now,
right.
There's
actually,
a really hard part.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
There's a really,
I don't know if
yes.
it's the bridge or I don't know what
yes.
it is.
Safe behind bus. It's that part. And I'm not
yeah.
doing it right now.
And you hold it.
I can't
it
always
hold
do
it.
It
you hold it.
And yeah.
It requires
we'll never rest till then, this I yeah. swear.
Okay,
this
we've lost
I
most of our audience.
That.
Yeah. Okay, you shouldn't start.
I feel like there should be a deep dive album. I'm just saying.
Well,
maybe
you know
that's
what?
Part of the live show that tours
Listen,
eventually.
Erica. I want to move on to Erica's body of work, but I will say that yes. Lennon's 40th birthday, they hosted a professional karaoke party. Again, I was very uncomfortable. I didn't sing, but Lennon showed up.
You
in
didn't
a,
sing?
No. I didn't, because I don't, again, unless it's part of your world, no one needs to hear it. And so I was listening, but Lennon showed up in like a black jumpsuit and performed a few stolen moments.
Is yes. all that I have.
It was one of the most inspired performances I've ever seen in my life. Because she,
what's your
she
song,
did it,
Erica? I mean, I've heard you sing
mostly
it,
with her eyes
what's
closed.
Your song?
You know, I don't have the strongest voice, but I have ambition, like you, June.
Yeah, me too.
And I enjoy...
I think we believe we're singers, and it's sort of, who cares if we are or aren't.
Yes, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, when I was young, I wanted to be on the Mickey Mouse Club, of course. And my mom was just sort of like, I made my mom watch it, and she was like, these are professional dancers and singers, and... You're not. And so I don't know if it's going to work
she
out.
She was
for
level
you.
Setting. She was level setting for you.
She was. And I think, you know, I didn't listen to her. But I love singing The Prayer by Celine Dion and Andrea Bocelli. Ken
I
and
don't
I
even know that one. What is
okay,
that?
It's like all of a sudden and it's in Italian and people, it's hilarious. It's like very... operatic and like,
very much so. Yes.
Yeah. It's very theatrical. I don't know. I love like lately I've loved like Olivia Rodrigo and
sure.
you know
Driver's License. Love
Driver's
song.
License Happier. No, but I loved like musical theater. So I'll get in there June with some Les Mis.
Well, but can I say this, Erica? You and Ken seem to pursue fun for fun's sake. Like, that is a crazy thing to turn a kitchen into a karaoke room. But I, to me, I'm like, I like this couple because they, that's, there's no, what is the professional end to karaoke? There is none.
Right.
It's just fun. And it's just like a party.
Yes. I mean, Ken was the driving force behind that. And I think,
sure.
like, of the two of us, he's the driving force. I mean, he was... alone at a block party.
Right.
So
getting his face painted.
He does like push us in that realm more, I think. But I'm trying to prioritize fun for myself as well.
That's wonderful.
Thank you,
Erica.
So much.
That's wonderful news. Can I don't really know this, and I'm really curious because I know both you and your brother have both left Alabama.
Yeah.
Did you like how'd you get out of there? What was the and
right.
when?
You know, when I realized I was in Alabama, I think.
Yeah. And
as
when
a
did
young
that hit?
Child, I was like, yeah. I need to get out of here. I mean, like 4 or 5 years old, like truly
that young,
like realizing, you know, just like, oh, this is not where I feel like I should be. But it was like, obviously like both like a cultural thing and just sort of like seeing, you know, media, seeing TV shows and like seeing how life was depicted other places. I was like, oh, I think maybe I should go try to do that somewhere. you know?
Wow.
How did your family get to Alabama?
Okay, so my mom is a white woman, and she was born there. She lived outside of, remember that podcast Shit Town?
Yes.
About like the crazy man and mazes, yes, and tattoos and whatever. She lived outside of Shit Town growing up. Okay. And so Shit Town adjacent. And then my dad is Japanese. He lived in Japan until his 30s, and he was a martial artist, like kind of a protege of this famous teacher in Japan. And
wow,
there were people in Alabama who were like, we don't have anything. We don't have a single dojo, a single karate teacher anywhere. Could someone, they contacted my dad's teacher's organization. They were like, can somebody come start a school in Birmingham? And like, we'll take it over after a year. And so it's so interesting. Like my dad was sent to Alabama and my uncle was sent to New York City and had a, you know, wildly different life. But my dad came to Alabama and at first he was like, what is this? This is just like trees and it's too quiet. He was from Tokyo. So it was like the hugest city.
Oh my God.
To go from that to like, you know, 1970s Birmingham, Alabama was like quite a change. But he became really good friends with the students that requested he come over and start the school, and he's still friends with them to this day. And like when we had kids, you know, my mom was like, oh, I want to come live near you. And my dad was like, I can't leave Alabama because I love trees and rednecks. I think he meant like Southern, he doesn't love racism, but like he loves folksy people. He goes to Walmart many times a day. Like, wow, he's settled.
I would do anything to watch that movie. What a fascinating journey. And also like, yeah, to think of the other brother landing in New York City. I mean, wow. And yeah, how did their relationship like sustain itself? Or
they had a very like, you know, they were really, really close. And they basically, they have a very dramatic story of their own where they broke off from their like organization, started their own sort of karate organization. And my uncle passed away a few years ago, but he and my dad were like just very different people. Like my dad was the youngest and like sort of the most pragmatic, like survivor. You know, they grew up post World War II, Japan, like so poor. And my uncle was just like a little more of a partier and like just loved the excitement of like the city and like what he was just like more gregarious or whatever. I mean, they both, but they both had this like, this very strong like rock star martial arts persona that we would see when we would go to tournaments or like different events that the karate world, I mean, like my dad had like a posse. I mean, he was
so
like,
hot.
He was like embarrassing, you know, Japanese dad to me, like most of the time. And then we would see him in this light of like everyone like freaking out, like he was famous, you know?
Oh my God.
Did you study martial arts?
So barely. It was just like a little. And then they were like, okay, you're not.
You don't have it. You don't have it. They asked you to bow out.
You don't have it.
What about your children? Have you thrown them in to see if they've got it?
Not, I mean, like, the problem is my dad is so hardcore about his style that everything else is bullshit. So, like, we can't go to, like, Karate Kids or whatever.
No.
Or, like, the dance studio that has Taekwondo or whatever. It's just, I could, but I can't.
Understood.
Like internally,
understood.
I'm like, so like my son is there right now, like staying with my parents, and he does like train with my dad a little bit every day.
Oh
like,
my God.
Because I'm just like,
story.
You have to.
You have to enter the dojo to be
you
with grandpa.
Experience
you
this.
Have to be in the dojo.
Yeah.
Oh
that
shit. That's good.
Erica. Wow.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is like the city, like they come from Tokyo and you're in Alabama, but like there must have been something in you too that was like there's that draw to the city, that draw to something else was embedded in your blood. Because it wasn't like so you're from strongly. Like multiple generations necessarily on both sides in Alabama. That's really right. Interesting.
Yeah.
So Erica, okay. So can you tell me, because I'm really, I know I've always talked about like, I'm still looking for a mentor and I don't know at what age you can still like be placed with one, but I never really had one. I've always wanted one, you know? And I don't know if it's still possible for me, but talk to me about Mentorship Matters and what work you're doing there, because I'm so inspired by it and I find it to be so amazing and I need to do more of that. And again, nobody's asked me to be their mentor. Sure. But
I thought you were going to ask Erica to be your mentor, because honestly, I'd like to throw my hat in the ring.
I do honestly feel like on Burning Love, like Erica and Ken were actually my mentors for that time, you know? And maybe that's how mentorship can work, that it can be a period of time, then you move on to it. I just love the idea of calling someone my mentor.
Sure.
Sure.
I mean, I think
that's powerful.
Right back at you. I felt like very taken care of. I mean, like I was, you know, behind the scenes, but felt like so taken care of with like how fiercely you attacked every moment of that show. That was like, it really is like probably my favorite character I've ever had the pleasure to write for. Julie Crystal-White.
Crystal-White is honestly so obsessed with her. Okay, wait. Can I just say something that I'll never forget? And then I want to hear about Mentorship Matters. I will never forget. So the first season of Burning Love, it was all women and Ken was playing The Bachelor. And, you know, we had gotten the scripts and all of us had shown up like with having watched all the seasons of The Bachelor, researched our parts, having knew our lines ready to improvise, knew everybody else's lines and scene, knew what scenes were coming up. And then we go into my season with me and the guys. And when I tell you that barely any of them had watched the show, they didn't know what scenes were what. Nobody had a script. Ken was like, wow, this is the difference between men and women. Like we were overprepared.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and they were like, where are we and what are we doing today? It was just so funny to me.
Wild.
And it was like wrangling sheep. To try to get them all together and explain what was going on. And, you know, and then on that first season, it was like we were a Girl Scouts troop, like ready to.
But that is what I find one of the reasons why making friends with other female comedians and writers is so easy, is that we are all trapper keeper A-plus students.
Right.
And who usually loved Anne of Green Gables or something equivalent.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm like, where? Of course, these women were waiting for me my whole life. I just didn't know where you were.
Right. Just look for the trapper keepers. It's like Mr. Rogers says, look for the helpers. Just look for the binders.
Look for the underlined notes. And people would ask me, can I borrow your notes? And I would say, absolutely not. I'll be studying with them every available moment.
Anyway, Erica, so tell me about Mentorship Matters. And also this term that I feel like you've coined, which is not imposter syndrome, but intruder syndrome.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that and what the difference is?
Sure. When I heard the term imposter syndrome, that resonated with me a lot. But also, I think imposter is like, oh, they're going to know I'm not blank. They're going to figure out I'm not X. Like I should. And then once they figure out that, they'll realize I shouldn't be here. But to me, the slight variation of intruder syndrome is like growing up in Alabama, where basically everyone in our small town was white. And so there was no hiding. There was no like, they already figured out. It was like that I was different, wrong, whatever. And so my childhood, like, and what that felt like can be kind of summed up in this one story that took place on school picture day, probably like first or second grade. And those days were like packed with pressure anyway, because it was like, not to sound like a grandma, but like pre-digital, it was like You took that picture and you couldn't wait for it to be like, this is who I am.
You only got one like, shot.
Yes. You took a brush to school and you like
hope for
dressed
the best.
Up and you hope for the best. So I'm sitting there in the line and everyone is sitting for their picture. And I hear the photographer say, you know, smile, Miss America, smile, Miss Alabama. And then I sit down and I hear, smile, Connie Chung. And that was not what I wanted to hear at that moment. It was like,
what?
In hindsight, I'm like, yeah, Connie Chung is like way more accomplished probably than your average Miss America. But like, I was just, it was a,
wow.
It was a signal to me that it was like, you're not like everybody else. And I see that, you know what I mean? So like
wow.
And I was like, I'm an HSP, whatever. So like, I felt that so, so deeply. And in the shows I watched and like what stories were being told, what ideals of beauty were being presented. Mm-hmm. It was like, I just kind of felt like, am I not right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or like, how do I exist?
I'm not in this story. That's what I remember Gina Rodriguez saying. I'm not in this story. I'm not a princess because I don't see myself here. So where am I?
And it was like, and so it was confusing. So like, yeah, I think the great joy of my career that I've, apart from Julie Grissel-White, is getting to work on these shows that feature families of color, women of color, young women of color who are figuring their shit out. And it's like a fully realized depiction of you know, of these characters and these stories. And so that has been my, and I will say, like, even when I first started working and had success with Burning Love and was trying to figure out what to do next, when I got the offer for Fresh Off the Boat, I hesitated a little bit just in my own insecurity about like, oh, well, people just think like, of course she's going to write for the Asian show. Do you know what I mean? Because I was still viewing it from the, you know, the lens of like white mainstream, whatever, who like nobody's even like looking at what I'm doing. But like, you know, just that, the conditioning of that, like with our, in our society. So, but I, you know, thankfully did it and got to work for like one of the most amazing writer producers ever, Ninotchka Khan, who's a genius and
obsessed with her.
Met like really incredible people and really like learned how to do that job. So with intruder syndrome, like I still felt that a little in Hollywood and working. So my goal, so Mentorship Matters was started by this awesome writer, Raelle Tucker, and it started over the pandemic. It's a mentorship program that pairs aspiring writers of color with working TV showrunners, like sort of high level writers. And we sort of like help them, we help our mentees develop their pilot scripts. We give them notes at every step of the journey. And then we like truly help them meet the right people or like get introduced, help open those doors for them. And there have been like, it's only we've only had 1 year of the program and it's had like tremendous success already because I think it's just like, I think it's all about empathy at the end of the day. It's like, I'm seeing you and I understand what you're going through and I'm going to talk to you about the process of writing, what story you're trying to tell. And like, I'm going to make sure that you're able to communicate that so that other people understand it. So it's been really wonderful. And I think the application process is closed for the second season of the program, but like, please keep it on your radar. It's like, it's an awesome organization.
So that's incredible. And I love the idea of just also like opening doors and doing some of that logistical kind of granular
Because that's it.
Networking, because people don't know. And also, like, it's I think about, like, my kind of start of my career with Casey, meeting her at NYU. It's like, well, we were both able to go to NYU because our parents paid for us to go to NYU. And just all of the ways in which you start to develop these professional connections.
Right.
And how a lot of that has to do with who you know, what spaces you were able to gain access to and could afford to gain access to, et cetera, et cetera. So bridging those kinds of gaps when people don't necessarily have those inroads is so huge. And you can have all of the amazing talent that you want to have. But if those inroads and if, like, you can't on-ramp anywhere, you're totally stuck.
Right.
And so that's just so incredible. So where can our deep divers for the next season of Mentorship Matters, like, where can they find that application, and how do they access it?
It's mentorshipmatters.tv.
Mentorshipmatters.tv. Okay, yeah. So if they go on there, if you are a deep diver, and it's specifically for young women of color,
and please, men.
I'm so sorry. Yes. Okay, so young people of color, aspiring writers to head on to apply for the next season of Mentorship Matters.
And it must feel
amazing.
It must feel so good too, to feel like, okay, I'm going to do what you could think of was a little thing. You're like helping somebody with this script, okay, this pilot script, or you're helping getting them in a room. But it's going to have the kind of reverberations that a little you is going to be sitting in Alabama and turn on the TV and see themselves reflected in that story. And I have chills about how many circles, you know, that this little act of kindness, because it is, you're taking time out of your very busy life to help people. That's huge.
That's beautiful.
And then look what you do. You end up changing the world in that tiny little way. I love that.
I love the way that you put that. And I think in our world, it just feels overwhelming. Like, what can I do? What can I actually, like, help with? How can I be involved? And sometimes, like, I'll catch myself thinking, like, oh, this is, like, I'm not doing enough. This is frivolous, or this is just TV. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares? But I think it goes back to exactly what you said. Like, it's those stories that we see. This is the, you know, world that's reflected back on us. And for kids to be able to see people who look like them, stories that resonate with them, it means a lot.
Oh, yeah, God, yes, it, means everything. It does. It's everything. And it's also, you know, I always think about representation in terms of, like, it doesn't actually mean that we always, you know, that the character has to be, like, perfect, unflawed, superhuman. Like, the superhuman representation is, I think, is starting to be a thing of the past, of, like, this person is diverse, non-white, but they're perfect in every. I love the idea of how you described it, of a full picture of humanity, that these stories are full and flawed and heartbreaking and powerful, and all of the other things that are full pictures of humanity that other characters are given. So that's so exciting, Erica. And where can our deep divers find just you on Instagram, social media? Where do you reside?
Okay, breaking news. I've just started a public Instagram.
What?
I have two pictures. For, like, so long, I didn't have, like, I had, like, a secret one and I didn't know what to do with it. And it was going badly. And then I just, like, got off for a while. But now I'm back. And I'm at Erica_Oyama. I have two pictures up. But I promise to bring more content. I'm going to, you know, see what I can do.
The people need to feast their eyes on you. To be honest, it's a crime. I think it's a crime that we hide you in a writer's room. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Mom, let's get you out of the light. Let's get you out of the light. Okay, and get you, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to see what I can do with some photo shoots. And then please, please watch Never Have I Ever Season 3. It's coming out on Netflix Friday, August 12th. I wrote and directed episode 9. And I'm so excited about it.
What a thrill. Erica_Oyama. Thank
Thank you for coming on to the deep dive. I'm actually going to
report my Instagram.
That's what this has all been about. Fuck mentorship matters.
Give me some and by the way, we're gonna
listen. We're going to be giving you some content from this actual podcast that you can post. So there will be some content.
Great. I need content.
We all need content. You know, I mean, what are we doing in our lives if we're not creating content? So we'll be sending you some graphics to post. And I am so glad you brought up Bittersweet. I have never read a book in my life that literally described my personality to a T.
I can't wait.
It was pretty wild, I must say. So thank you so much for bringing that book to my attention. And I am going to be reaching out another. I'm not afraid to drop a DM in someone's account. And so I'm going to see what I can find of Susan Cain. And
I'll
think you'll
love her too. And she'll probably see how much I have going on and be like, okay.
She'll be like, that's a bot.
That's a bot. You show me
there's
two
no
pictures,
way that's
I'm like,
a real person.
That's right.
All right. I'm going to go do a photo shoot today and see what
okay,
I
can. Fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you, Erica. Right.
Love you,
love
Erica.
You, Jess.
So much.
Dream we'll see you through. Next week, Deep Divers.
Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go diving deep. Let's go on a deep dive. No secrets will we keep. It's June and Jessica going deep. How deep can you go? Oh, really deep. Let's go on a deep dive. Let's go diving deep.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free one-month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support this show is to rate and review.
And a huge thank you to Ann Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to AnnGeddesBaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more.
We'll see you next time.